This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every meeting.
I'm Marcella and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Marcella. So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognize it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. And this is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. And we're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. So Marcella, welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are?
Thank you. I'm Marcella, alcoholic. My sobriety date is December the 6th, 2000. I am originally from, well, I grew up in Southern California, but have lived the last 15 years in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So fairly new to New Zealand?
Yes, definitely new to New Zealand. I was traveling when the lockdown happened and have been doing Zoom meetings like every other member of AA has been recently. So it's been
brilliant.
Nice.
Welcome. So, so 2000, so that makes you 19... Nearly 20 years sober?
Correct. 19 years.
Wow.
This year.
And so tell us, so what do you do? Are you going to, are you staying here in New Zealand? Is this
So my plan was, I was calling it the year of 20.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to travel to 20 countries in 2020, and at the end, hopefully celebrate 20 years of sobriety.
Okay.
But the COVID smashed that plan.
How many countries did you get through?
I got to two.
Okay. 2 out of 20.
Yeah, 2 out of 20. But it's been, you know, it's still been an experience and adventure. Mm-hmm. Of sobriety. So.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what normally do you do, you know, so Oregon's home for you. You've got family there?
I do. I have my daughter there. The rest of my family, immediate family is in California.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. So, yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your drinking. What was, you know, how did you start?
I just, I was really an anxious kid growing up, just really quiet, insecure, and I just had this level of anxiety that I couldn't manage, I couldn't control it. And when I found alcohol, it was the summer before junior high school.
Which makes you about?
About 12 or 13 years old. I remember that feeling of calming that anxiety and feeling okay in my skin.
How did you get your hands on your first drink?
My first drink. I had a park. I grew up right next to a park, and we had bushes with park benches inside the bushes. You know, and it was very convenient for the neighborhood kids to go behind that with a bottle. You know, and our parents, I grew up in a middle class family, and I think all the parents in our neighborhood had a bar in the house, and so it was really, really easy to get our hands on alcohol at a young age.
And so you mentioned it had that calming effect. You know, was that something, you know, that it did, you know, for some time?
So I just remember it like coated my insides, you know, like it relaxed everything in my body, and it made me feel a part of. That was definitely a part of the attraction.
And did it even make you sick as a young teen?
Yes, I remember. I mean, you know, when we were drinking these things called Mickey's beers as well, that was really cheap to get and very easy to get, which was the low bottom alcohol for teenagers. And and I got sick many times on that. You know, going to school, I just remember being, you know, wasted going to school and nobody knowing, you know. I don't know how that happened.
And so, you know, tell us a little bit more about your drinking as you, you know, progressed into your late teens and in early adulthood. What was that like?
So very similar in high school. I started using other substances as well as alcohol. You know, I just became one of those kids in high school that that couldn't stay in school because of that. Like, I got kicked out of two high schools. I somehow managed to graduate at 17. And then I met a real older alcoholic who became my daughter's father, who was very experienced in his drinking career. And we kind of set off on this drinking path for the next 10 years, which was, it just got really destructive. And you know, when you're with another full-blown alcoholic and you're drinking and using other substances together, it's a match for disaster, you know.
And your relationship with your family during, you know, this time?
I just was an outcast. I just felt like really different and felt apart, like just different from my family. I couldn't show my face. You know, I would come around for holidays to get money, you know, because That was what I needed at that time. I was just very much a taker through the alcohol abuse. And I would show up at holidays to get money, and then I would just retreat back into my world of alcoholism. And
During this time, you know, were there any incidents or events or any problems with the law, jobs, you know?
So I tried to work. I couldn't hold a job for very long, just because I just had a hard time functioning, you know, with the life that I was living at that time. my alcoholism progressed into a way that I just was not a functioning member of society mm-hmm. anymore okay. at the end. You know, I tried to get sober at 20. I went to my first meeting.
Wow. And how did you hear about, like, how did you know, hear about Alcoholics Anonymous at 20?
So my sister, actually, she was my younger sister, 3 years younger, and mm-hmm. she knew I had a problem.
Mm-hmm. Did she approach you?
She said she was going to tell our parents at that time, because I was living at home at mm-hmm. 20. I just had my daughter, and she said she would tell my parents about, you know, what I was doing if I didn't go to this meeting with her.
Wow.
And so she coerced me into my first AA meeting, which I'm super grateful for to this day, because that's what turned the lights on. And I heard something at that meeting that I identified with, and the people that shared, and I related.
And so, you know, at 20, to go to this meeting, what were the people like?
So it's kind of a funny story. She took me to, I didn't know this at the time until probably like a year later. It was a men's recovery house that okay. was an open meeting.
Okay.
She didn't know that either. Sure. And there was like this giant living room with couches, like all different ways in every direction of this giant and people sitting on all these, and mostly men, like it was like 95% men, and just these couches everywhere. And I just, oh my gosh, but still mm-hmm. I heard something mm-hmm. at that meeting, you okay. know, and I heard the message.
So what happened from there?
So I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor. Mm-hmm. I worked the first three steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, mm-hmm. and I got connected to people, and then I hit 21.
Okay.
And I just thought, you know, maybe I was just making too much out of this alcoholism. And you know, at that time I was not in the relationship with my daughter's father,
mm-hmm.
and I just thought, you know, maybe I'm just making too much of it.
Okay.
And so I slowly started retreating, you know, like I didn't work a fourth and fifth step,
mm-hmm.
and to this day, I know that was probably one of the reasons why I didn't manage to stay sober at that time, because I had created a lot of wreckage at 20 years old already, and I didn't have the opportunity yet to clean that up.
And so what was it like when you went back to drinking, or back out there?
Yeah. So I started with alcohol, and it was not long before I ended up going back to the same places and hitting a much deeper bottom than.
And when you say back to the same places, was that, you know, binge drinking? Was it what was your actual drinking like?
So I mean, I started drinking in bars because I was 21 and I wanted mm-hmm. to be the normal drinker. And then I started drinking at home and using other things at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it just progressed into a place where I just couldn't get back from. I mm-hmm. tried to get back to AA.
And what were some of the things you tried to do?
So I tried going back to meetings, and I think I just couldn't surrender. I don't know what, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what the issues were, but I kept relapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just back and forth. I was a constant back and forth retread in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the next 8 years, until the last 2 years of my drinking and using other substances, I couldn't get back. Like physically, mm-hmm. I had gotten to a place where I was very sick, like okay. physically, you know, at that point, you know, I'm one of the low bottom alcoholics that,
So yeah, what was it that brought you to your knees?
Yeah. So I had gotten so deep in the alcoholism and the life that I was living that I had, given up my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, she was 8, and it just wasn't taking care of her, you know,
right.
I wasn't taking care of her appropriately. The way that she needed care, I was very into the disease, and And I ended up giving her to my mom. Mm. My mom ended up taking her that last year. And that, I mean, as hard as that was, it was the best thing for her, but it allowed me to hit a bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, it allowed me to hit a bottom. And, you know, one of the, they talk about the moments of clarity. The moment of clarity I had was sitting on a bus stop and watching the women go by with their, you know, their fancy hair and their makeup, and they're going to work. You know, and I wanted to be that. You know, I wanted to have my daughter in my life and get that back. That was one of my moments of clarity before getting sober this time.
And so, you know, what, you know, how did you find your way back into the rooms of AA?
I had a person that I had met, and she just kept, she never gave up on me. You know, wow. She never gave up on me, and she talked me into getting into detox the second time in treatment.
And that's something you did the first time?
I did it once and got to that third step and went back out. Yeah. And so this time I tried it again, and I just didn't want to do it. The big book talks about the turning point, the crossroads. And that's where I was at. I was at a detox. It was my belling button birthday. And I just couldn't, I knew I couldn't stay sober. Like, I knew that I couldn't stay sober, and I knew I couldn't go back to the way I was living. And so I bought a bottle. I bought anything I could to just end it that day. And I sat in a car, and I was just ready to just end it, because I couldn't live either way. And the best reason that I didn't do it that day was because it was my belly button birthday, and I couldn't have my death date and my sobriety date on the same day.
Wow.
And so I picked up the phone. I called that lady. I mean, I was loaded and drunk, you know, that day. And she met me at a Jack in the Box, and we went in the handicap stall, the Jack in the Box, the bathroom, and did a third step prayer on our knees.
Wow. So this is in a restaurant.
Yes, in a fast food handicap stall restaurant, we got on our knees and said the third step prayer. And I was really drunk and loaded. And then she took me to a meeting. She dropped me off. She had to be at work early. And she said, "Here, take care of her."
Wow.
And then I got a ride home that night, and the next day was my sobriety date to this day. And so I have two back-to-back birthdays. I have
my brilliant
belly button birthday, and then my sobriety date is the next day. So
tell us, what's it been like, you know, since coming back into the rooms, you know, nearly 20 years ago? What does recovery mean to you?
So that first couple of years, I thought, because I'd relapsed so many times, I really thought the next day was the day I was going to be struck drunk.
Wow.
You know, I really didn't believe that I could stay sober. Like, I really had that feeling inside, because I wanted it so bad, and I couldn't do it. But the difference in this time was I worked the steps so fast. Like, that's what the change. And I didn't know that until, you know, many years later. But it probably took 2 years before I didn't think that was, like, I was just going to be struck drunk, you know.
Okay. And so getting straight into those steps and plowing through. And so talk to us about sponsorship. Having a sponsor, has that been part of your recovery?
Yeah, definitely. That lady that I told you about, that she worked my first set of steps with me, and it was difficult to work those steps and to face all the wreckage. Like, I had a lot of fear and anxiety. I was still, so when I got sober, that anxiety came back, you know.
Right.
And I had to manage it. I had to find new ways to manage it. And one of those was working the steps. One of those was talking about it with other alcoholics. One of those was getting a home group with women that I connected with. One of those was doing the meeting after the meeting, showing up early, reading. Like, so there was ways that I forced myself to participate in that I was still...
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, talk my first couple of years. I was so shy and awkward, and I had a hard time communicating those first couple of years. But I just kept following direction. Like, I really followed direction from the women in the program that I got sober with.
And we talk about AA being, you know, it's not a religious program, but a spiritual program. What does that mean to you?
Spirituality has grown for me over the years of sobriety. The first month, I prayed for stupid things and they happened, you know, like I was really testing whatever was out there. Like I was really just, cause I had tried to get sober so many times and I failed. And so this time around, I was just really playing with it, you know, like pushing the button and seeing if, and so that transition through working the steps and making some of those big amends, that's when I really had, you know, the spiritual experiences of like being able to look people in the eye, to feel like a part of the world, you know, in a different way. Like I belonged here now, just building confidence, like, and feeling like that something was something that was happening to me bigger. Like it was a spirit that was beyond me.
Yeah.
And, you know, today, like, that just has continued to grow that relationship through Step 11 and seeking through prayer and meditation.
Yeah. And tell us, what's your life like today?
So today, you know, I don't think about drinking, you know, like I did early on at all, ever. It's not a part of my world. I love going to meetings. I was really excited to do meetings in other countries, and I did the first two countries. I went to a lot of meetings in Mexico, where I went to first, and then a lot of meetings here in New Zealand before lockdown happened. And now I've been able to do Zoom meetings all the places I wanted to go
all over the world.
which is really cool.
And so, you know, going to meetings, you know, it's really important. What are some of the other things you do, you know, to help you through, you know, periods where it might not feel so great?
Yeah, I still try and get out of myself. Like I have always been one of those people of service. And, you know, my first sponsor would say, like, when I would feel anxious, she'd say, just go do the dishes. You know, just do the dishes, like going to functions, going to holidays, like, you know, where you had to be around family that was awkward. And, you know, that's where I learned to do service, was just doing the dishes and getting out of myself. And today, you know, like when I go to a Zoom meeting, I see a new person that I haven't seen before. They identify as new. I'm like, I reach out to them like immediately, because it helps me. And, you know, if I can give back what's been given to me, like, that's one of the best gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, at 1 year sober, my sponsor said, she says, you may not feel like it now, but you are a dignified woman of Alcoholics Anonymous, and don't you ever forget it. You know, and I didn't feel it then. It took a while. But today I definitely feel like that dignified woman of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wear makeup and I go to work when I'm working, you know. And I got my daughter back. I didn't share that. But after like 9 months sober, and we've just grown into an amazing, she's an amazing person and a beautiful relationship. She's going to be 28 next month.
Wow.
So, yeah, and she's not an alcoholic, and which is, I was always worried, and I kind of shoved that down her throat for many years because I was so terrified, and, you know, but she's not. She's amazing.
And Marcella, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
Yeah, it's been great to be here.
So nice to have you here. All right, so for our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. This brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We'll now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.